Investment Committee, right?
I'd like to call the Capital Investment Committee to order. And actually, we have a quorum. The members checked in. We also have competition with Ways and Means, so we can call them back and forth. And some members have a bill up in another committee. We're going to go out of order because Representative Carlson's here. Representative Hausman, that's okay? Representative Hausman, technically this is in your part of your bill, but he hasn't testified before, so we'll let him testify. But it's basically yours. Representative Carlson?
Is anyone here from Tennessee County on the Bucknell Boulevard?
We're going to have one of the county commissioners is going to be here, and then one of the, I think, county engineers is going to be here to comment briefly on the Bucknell Boulevard.
He's going to be here or is here?
Really?
He's not here yet, you mean?
Is anybody from Tennessee County?
We'll just wait at that time.
I think they're on their way. We were in communication with them this morning, and so if it works for you to wait just a few minutes and maybe...
Okay, then we can go back, reverse.
They should be here shortly. Otherwise, I can do an overview.
We're just temporarily fine. That's fine. We can... let's see. Representative Doty, would you move the minutes for... When we got it? At the April 19th or February 19th?
Mr. Chairman, I would move to approve the minutes of February 19th.
Thank you, Representative Doty. Representative Doty moved the minutes of the February 19th. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? The minutes are approved. We will revert back to the original agenda and move the subcommittee report. We have House File 2943 by Madore. It's been passed out as a subcommittee, and it's returned to the... It should be moved to this committee back to finance, and I'll move that House File 2943 be recommended to pass and return to the finance division. And see, can someone here from the subcommittee that could comment basically on that bill? I don't remember quite what it was. First, we're going to have the adoption. I have to back up a bit. First, we have to adopt the subcommittee report. Did you say someone's out? I can move to the subcommittee. And the chair will move to adopt the subcommittee report. And we have two subcommittee reports that came through. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The subcommittee report has been adopted. Now we have House File. Part of the subcommittee report is House File 2943, which was Representative Madore. We need to pass that and return that to the Finance Division. I don't remember what basically that was it illegal? Okay, that's right. That was that paratransit bill where Representative Madore talked about the transit facilities for the handicapped. Oh, okay. We'll let Representative Madore just give us a short description.
Thank you, Mr. and members. 2943, yes?
Right.
That bill, thank you very much. That bill relates to creating a report that determines the needs for transit for people with disabilities, and it expands the scope to include latent numbers. So what we'd be looking at here, we had testimony on it, and Mr. Gottfried from Greater Minnesota Transit came in and said that those numbers are already available for greater Minnesotans. They are not, however, available for the metropolitan area. So it's putting a little bit more work on the metropolitan area representatives to do that work and to give us a number. What the goal of the report would then be, thank you, the goal of the report at that point then would be, we have a million people who need service, and we're only able to provide service to 15,000. So it starts to marry the need with the service that's already been provided, so that as we're planning in the future here, we can address those numbers and properly be prepared to fund those projects.
Are there any questions of Representative Beard?
Mr. Chair, Representative Minori, you said a million people need this service. No. Is that just a hypothetical number?
Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, yes, it's hypothetical. That's both of those numbers are. What I'm saying, though, is that we don't really know what that number is at this point, and that's what we're hoping to be able to get with this annual report from MnDOT.
Any further questions or not? If not, all in favor of the adoption of the subcommittee report on House File 2943, say aye.
Aye.
If not, it's already adopted. It's passed. To pass it, we return to the Finance Division. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
No? To the contrary? The subcommittee report is passed and will be referred to the Finance Division. Is Representative Yarrison? He's not here? Let's see. I'll move that one.
Yeah.
I'm going to look for it, please. The chair will move the subcommittee report on House File 1822 by Representative Yarris, and basically this deals with a hands-free cell phone use, and I don't know, is there someone from the committee that wants to comment on it or discuss it? Who's there? Representative Magnus, weren't you there?
No.
Okay. Representative Morrow, were you there? Okay, I was there. What it does, it basically provides for the hands-free use of, and there's not a penalty, it's actually just basically a peace officer may not stop anyone for the hands-free or the use of a cell phone unless it's an ordinary, regular stop. And if they can conclude that they were using the cell phone illegally when they were doing the illegal use of the vehicle in the first place, then they can charge it. Other than that, it is no impact. But it does provide for the use of a hands-free cell phone, but that would be one that would be part of the vehicle or anything else. But technically, it's kind of a first step, I think, in my opinion, to decrease the use of cell phones. It was testified that the cell phone use has many fatalities and accidents due to it. Cell phone use as it is to DWIs. That was kind of hard to believe, but that's what he testified. So. Anyhow, it was passed out of the subcommittee, and we have it in this committee, and I move to pass it without recommendation to the, where are we going? To the floor. Because it doesn't have to go through another Finance Division. Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to figure out what the penalty is.
There's no penalty there.
There's no penalty.
Otherwise, it has to go to public safety.
Well, that's my question. That if there's no, there's no penalty to doing it, then...
That's great.
I mean, if there is a penalty, we'll have to go to another committee, if I understand
right.
It right.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay.
Representative Beard?
How can there be a citation issue with no penalty? And I'm sorry I wasn't in that subcommittee either. I'm not on it.
Actually, Representative Beard, if you look at line 1.16, it kind of indicates that.
Yeah, 1.17 says, unless the officer...
Yeah. That would be the penalty that's already in statute that they'd be charged with. And that'd be correct. Or Mr. Burris can probably comment on that.
Mr. Burris, shed a little light on that.
Mm-hmm.
It's striking me that this bill is actually the nose of the camel under the edge of the tent, proverbially. Much like we're experiencing now with the seatbelt law.
That's correct, Representative Beard. I think it is too. But basically, the penalty involved is basically the penalty that's now for the violation. That's what they'd be charged with.
Mr. Chairman, is there a violation now, or is Mr. Beard going to...
Actually, 118 would indicate what the violation would be. Mr. Burr?
Mr. Chair and members, there would be a penalty associated with this. The language on 1.16 to 1.18 establishes restrictions on when a citation under this section could be issued. But there could be a citation for using a cell phone under this section if it's not hands-free or meeting the criteria that are laid out.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess is my question. It appears as if we have actually created a new violation here, and obviously this can't be a primary reason for a stop, but if they stop you for erratic driving, speeding, whatever, and oh, by the way, you've got a cell phone stuck to your ear, it appears that now they can add a citation for that in conjunction with the other stop. What is the penalty for that? That's what I'm looking for.
Mr. Burr?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, the penalty would be a petty misdemeanor, which is the default for violations under this chapter.
Is that the $25 fine that we have now for the incidental seatbelt non-use of the seatbelt?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, that fine is set out as a sort of special set fine in that section. So as a petty misdemeanor, I'll have to check on what the maximum amount is, but it's no jury trial and a maximum amount of fine, and the actual fine is set by different court districts.
Okay.
Representative Beard, do you want to recommend to re-refer to public safety?
Mr. Chairman, I'm thinking it has to, because I think there is actually a penalty involved here, even if it is already in statute for a petty misdemeanor. Mr. Burris said, I think that that needs to be vetted by people who specialize in looking at that question. I don't know that we want to take time to solve it. I would make the motion to amend your motion to re-refer this to the Public Safety Committee.
Mm-hmm.
We can continuing to pass it without recommendation, Mr. Chair, to the Public Safety Committee. Clear.
Before we vote on that, there's a question by Mr. Russell Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make sure that this was a secondary offense, that no one could be pulled over for using a cell phone. This would only be something that could be cited if they were pulled over for some other violation.
That's correct. That's what it is, right?
Okay.
Listen. Yeah, let me think about this. We've got two things we can do. We can hold this over for Representative Yaros to see. Basically, if we move it out without recommendations, we should be killing it, and probably we should leave it lay temporarily in the committee and see what Representative Yaros would want to do with it. It should probably go to public safety. I mean, you'd give him the chance to go. Otherwise, we'd be killing it, I think. Now we can have a page check to see if Mike's around, or we lay this temporarily to the side to see if Representative Yaros is here.
That would be a higher.
Yeah. We could move to Representative Hausman. Is Representative Carlson back? Representative Hausman, what? You see her or not? Oh, I see. Representative Hausman, we moved, we temporarily, Representative Carlson's also back too, I see. You don't have two of them yet though, huh? Okay, we'll let Representative Hausman start.
I think I can't see you.
Representative Housman. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, I can't speak without maps and pictures, so
okay.
People who know me know I carry these everywhere.
Representative Housman, I don't know, are you a member of this committee? I've forgotten.
I am.
Okay, then you can move your own bill. Right.
So I would move House File 380, which I understand is we're including other...
Representative Housman, it's moving the delay law.
First, I would move House File 380, and then I'll move the delete all
right.
amendment.
Representative,
do you want to act on the delete all first before I speak?
You want to take that first? Representative Housman, we delete all to House File 380. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? It passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're going to be very quick because we know that this committee has lots to do. But first, I want to just say the motivation for that whole group of bills you're going to be hearing today, moving people by rail and moving freight by water. There are climate change reasons to do some of those things. The goals we set last year, if they are more than words, we have to somehow follow through in our transportation planning. The issue of the carbon footprint, the issue of peak oil, if those of you who are on energy committee or local government, you've heard some of those discussions of that date when we arrived at the stage of peak oil. We've passed that already. DHS is very, very concerned about something they're calling the silver tsunami. The growing number of older people in the state who won't be driving, and as grocery stores close in small towns and as medical centers become more remote, having a state that plans for transportation options becomes more and more important. I would add, particularly when we talk about some of the intercity projects in this bill, that the other issue we need to be concerned about as transportation members is the instability of the airline industry. For us to begin to ask, should we intentionally be looking at some options for intercity travel, particularly the Chicago to St. Paul route. As you may know, most other states and regions are ahead of us, and our discussion last night on the transportation bill was probably one of those reasons. Many other states already have a dedicated funding source for this. But in a sense, I would suggest that both governance and funding have been somewhat broken. And when you hear me talk about my bills today and an individual line, I'm never going to talk about just a line, because none of this has to do with a single line or a single project.
Hmm.
It has to do with a system that works together. So whether you live in Rice, Minnesota, or Duluth, or Rochester, or the Twin Cities, somehow this has to make sense for you. The you will notice on my map, I have taken my black magic marker, and I have crossed out 2030, and I have written in 2020. Because I think sometimes looking at the challenges we have ahead of us between now and 2020 are such that we really have to be aggressive about these goals, and we have to do more and faster. Since the 35W bridge collapsed, all of the people who know the area have found side streets to travel. So in my city, for example, you will find if you go on Cleveland Avenue or Raymond Avenue or Pierce Butler or Como, that all those streets have really become sort of replacement highways in this interim. If they didn't, those highways that we have left would be in even more gridlock than they are. And Mr. Chair, I would, I know there are, there is another bill that for some reason didn't get here. I thought it had been introduced, and that is a Liebling bill that includes Rochester in the planning, and so I may just mention that as well today. But to
set the context about the system. I'm here to talk about Central Corridor. And Central, if it weren't for everything happening in the West and everything happening in the East, would be an irrelevant corridor. It is simply the corridor that connects everything we're doing here to everything that is going to happen here. And you need a connection point. Some of you may have heard or read the discussions in the paper about the discussion St. Paul was having about the concourse on the depot. I brought this picture to show you that discussion was never about the Central Corridor. It was about this whole region here and a connection to Chicago. Will any of those lines ever happen? Will high-speed rail come from Chicago and up the Red Rock Corridor? Will Rush Line happen? Will there be a 94th corridor out in a very congested area? And if there will be those corridors, they have to meet somewhere where all the modes come together. And what you see behind here is sort of a depiction of what, when we talk about the concourse, that's what it is. The area behind the depot where all the modes can come together. High-speed rail, commuter rail, light rail, bus bays, where passengers disembark and get on the right mode for the next part of their ride. The Central Corridor and Union Depot have huge federal dollars to match. In the case of the Union Depot, there is $50 million already, $50 million in federal money, and eventually we're just trying to match in little bits and pieces that particular federal money. The same is true of the Central Corridor. I will tell you that the transportation bill we passed last night is absolutely an essential part of this, and I have nightmares sometimes if I think about that not coming to pass, because the idea of a funding source for the long term takes some stress off of the bonding bill and the general fund. The high-speed rail, just the thing about that, because that may be something that many know less about. The Minnesota portion would follow the Amtrak route from the Twin Cities to Winona and on to Chicago. And trains would run about every 2 hours and make the trip in 5.5 hours. That's not quite high-speed rail like Europe knows high-speed rail, or even some lines on the East Coast, but certainly better than the 8 hours, I think, that it takes currently. Illinois and Wisconsin are already moving ahead with some of this. They're having great success with intercity passenger services. The federal government is now beginning to support these services as a cost-effective way to provide transportation for mid-distance trips in the 300 to 500-mile range. I can tell you that just in terms of operations for this kind of service, Illinois is now doing $28 million per year for operations. Wisconsin is doing $6 million per year. And I happen to know Wisconsin is waiting for us now to direct our Department of Transportation to work jointly with them across that state line, not only at Hudson, but also at La Crosse, where the high-speed connection would happen. When you see a map like this, what you see is a system plan that will lead to the development of urban density. One of the goals, I don't know if any of you are on that the governor's climate change group, but that is one of their recommendations, that we intentionally develop the urban core. And you see all of those corridors coming together. So when I talk about Central or the Union Depot or high-speed rail, I cannot talk about those three bills separate from all of the others. Representative Lenteski is not going to be able to be here today, and so she asked me specifically to reference her Highway 494 study. There's one other piece that I think we don't want to get lost. Though the Urban Partnership Agreement puts money into this corridor, it, I think, does most of that funding along the 35W, and Cedar Avenue has some additional needs beyond that that weren't part of that Urban Partnership Agreement conversation. So I'm mentioning that on their behalf as well. I think you're going to hear from these other authors, and so I won't say a great deal other than to say discussing line by line becomes somewhat irrelevant because it really is about moving to serve this entire area. When I heard these bills in capital investment last year, we heard 10 bills that included the Rice, Minnesota extension of the North Star, which now is in the transportation bill that you just passed last night. And we have the Duluth, the North Shore Express. Representative Liebling, as I said, is offering something on behalf of Rochester. And as we heard those 10 bills and included them in the bill, the only complaint I had from my committee was from Representative Erdahl from Litchfield and Representative Junkie from Wilmer, who said, where's our line? More and more people are understanding the need for this transportation option. And for us, I think one of the things we have to continue to work on is what is the governance discussion that's going to happen. We have Met Council, which is focused on seven counties. We have an office of transit in MnDOT that has often had a more narrow view of their responsibility. We haven't funded that to a great extent. But somehow looking at an entire system and a system that goes far beyond the seven county metro area and links regional centers, I think, becomes important as well. That is, Mr. Chair, a very quick way of talking about very big projects, but I think all of you have heard about these so much. We have many people here who can answer specific questions about any given project, but that's all I will.
Representative Hausman, the other individual projects, I see their members here, and they've been actually heard before, except Representative Carlson, Representative Lane. So somehow in the process, we could continue on yours, or should we bring in specifically Representative Lane's project in your bill?
We could. You're suggesting we hear those now.
As right, and we could include it in the one total.
I think that would be a good idea, Mr. Chair.
So, Representative Lane will probably take her first if she's there.
And I'm going to leave this up here because they're going to be talking about some of the reporters, so you can identify.
Did we have to leave that?
No.
I think we're just including it in the moment. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. Representative Lane, your bill is included in the all amendment. So we don't have to move your bill at all. You can just testify.
Thank you. This relates to the North Star Corridor commuter rail, and the Fridley Station has always been in that planned corridor, but it had a unique need because the way the tracks are configured, we need to come a tunnel underneath and come from both sides and come up underneath and come up in the middle. So that tunnel made it go into a delayed process as we worked out increased funding for that because it went past what the federal government was willing to do for a station. So we've been struggling to try to find money to get that job done. And now we'd like it to go through the bonding bill to help get the tunnel built and the station up so it's ready to go at the end of 09 when the North Star begins. I'd like to have Bill Schreiber of the North Star Corridor Development Authority speak to you about the details.
Welcome.
Chairman and members, I just want to assure you that this is not a last-minute idea as it relates to the Fridley Station. The Fridley Station has been a component of the North Star Corridor Development Authority line for the past 10 years. The reason is that Fridley contains two major employers in the metropolitan area. One is Medtronic, the other is United Defense, both of whom are bringing in representatives and they're doing training at both United Defense as well as Medtronic on a 5-day a week basis. And they said this would be a marvelous opportunity to bring people up on Hiawatha Light Rail from the airport, connect on to North Star, and then these two employers would pick them up at the Fridley Station and take them over to either Medtronic or United Defense. So it's been an integral part of NCDA for forever. The problem was that when you get down to that cost-effectiveness index, which you'll hear about with Central Corridor and other rails that are qualifying for federal funds, the federal government was requiring so much in contingency amounts that we had to pair the cost. So the Fridley station was the one that was paired. Why? Because it was the most expensive and you could bring the most dollars out. We feel confident that all of those contingency dollars will not be used, and we would like to argue federal government free up some of those dollars now and use it for the Fridley station. Unfortunately, that's not the way their rules work. So we need to get the Fridley station. We'd like to have it online when North Star opens, and it's a unique station because the station is in the center of the track and needs a tunnel going underneath. That's part of the reason it's so expensive. Some of that work that has to be done this summer while BNSF is doing other track improvements in the area. It's been a very cooperative effort, you'll hear from the Anoka County and the City of Fridley, in attempting to get this the funding for this station so everything can move ahead this summer.
And now I'd call Jim Kordiak, Commissioner in Anoka County.
Morning.
Welcome to the committee.
Chairman, those three members, my name is Jim Kordiak. I'm an Anoka County Commissioner and have for many years represented the Fridley area. I'm here today to seek your support. My comments may be fairly brief. Others may be able to respond, but the message is clear. We need help today. I'm here to seek your support for the funding of the Fridley Rail Station. It's an important and yet an unfinished link in the North Star Corridor that's under construction as we speak. While I regret that the station, no one more than me regrets that the station could not be completed, within the funding package that's been made available through local, state, and federal resources, it's still recognized as a critical link in that system. It's located in the city of Fridley. It's a heavy urban core. It's flanked on one side by Ramsey County, the other side by Hennepin County, another urban center. It is anticipated to be a very effective ridership location for the rail station, and yet it's remained unfinished at this point in time because of funding-related issues. State assistance is needed to finish this project. It's not going to get done without it. Your help is very necessary. We seek your assistance in this initiative, and we'll offer any further information that you might that might be required, but we'll help in any way that we can. I do want to personally thank Carolyn Lane on the House side, Senator Scott Beer on the Senate side, and all the co-authors of this bill who've come together to work to promote this initiative. And finally, really, I want to thank you for your prior support of the commuter rail project, and once again seek your report for this section of the remaining project that's under construction.
Thank you. Any questions of the Representative Beard?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe I'll just ask it to Representative Lane, and she can call up wherever she can to answer it. But I'm thinking of how the North Star project has moved along over these several years, and a price tag that's very large that's out there for it. How many other stations are on the North Star? And I'm not intimately involved with that, just the general principle. How many other stations are on this? Who's paying to have them built? And why wasn't this rolled into that charge in the first place? I know you just explained it, but could you just touch on it again as to why there's another $10.6 million on top of this project?
Okay.
And where I'm going with it is, are we going to be expected to be blindsided by other station requests to do the same thing? And then I have a follow-up question about
it. A unique situation for Fridley, and Bill, are you here to give the details? It was pushed out because it had additional funding for that tunnel, and that just put it on a back burner.
Mr. Chairman, Bill Schreiber again, Representative Beard. This one is different, and I think you're going to learn that as any of these rail systems evolve in the region, there are going to be other folks that will request station sites. That's not what we're talking about with Fridley. That was in from day one. Will there be other requests for station sites in the future? I expect so. But the point is, they are not. Any other station sites are not a part of the negotiated agreement with BNSF. They haven't gone through environmental impact statement work. They are way behind. Each of those requests is going to have to be evaluated on their own. The fact is that North Star Corridor corridor is one of the fastest growing in the state.
Mm-hmm.
So in the state of Minnesota, can you say, is it going to be all done now? No, I expect that over time there will be other locations that will be.
How many stations are there?
There are six right now.
Six. And that is, that's all that's in the works right now. There's others that are considering trying to come in later, but those are the ones that are in the works, those are in the plans, those are the ones. And it's just Fridley that is yet not completed. You have in your packet this, which shows how much has been, the check mark shows what part of it has been completed and what remains to be done to lay out where we are at this time.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, related to the station design, first of all, just so I'm clear, or we're clear, there are six other stations that are included in the number we've been dealing with over the last several years.
Correct.
On this particular one, I see it's going to come up, you're going to have to relocate one of the main lines, so we have, I assume, inbound and outbound trains on either side of the station platform.
That's correct.
What about the other six stations? Are we going to have pedestrians crossing tracks to actually access the trains, or how are we going to keep the pedestrians separated from other train activity near the platform?
Mr. Schreiber.
Mr. Chairman, each of the station sites is unique. At one location, it's actually going to be a ramp or elevator that goes up over the top of the tracks.
Okay.
You have to look at the amount of train traffic that's there at a given location. Other places, it will simply be pedestrians walking across the track with very secure drop arms and that type of thing, so that they aren't able to enter the track area near the time when the train is coming. One of the expenses of all of this is a huge number of safety improvements to the track itself, so that you constantly know where that train is, because now you're introducing pedestrians into the track area.
Mr. Chairman, I know one of the things that train operations always fear is a standing train in a station with an unexpected, or a movement behind it on another track, and we've all seen the videos on YouTube of pedestrians walking behind stop trains and so on and so forth. This, between the tracks platform arrangement, seems to address some of that concern. I'm just wondering about the other six stations, how that, thanks for your explanation.
Mr. Chairman, I think what BNSF will say is that where space is needed as part of the contract with NCDA, they are creating bypasses for the slow-moving trains so that a high-speed train can get past.
Mm-hmm.
And as it relates to the higher-speed trains, they will do the dispatching at a time so that there will not be a conflict.
Okay. That's enough for now. Thank you.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess it would be a question to the author or to Mr. Schreiber. I know that when the North Star was in the proposal stages here in Phase 1, that the FTA cut out Holy Boulevard because of existing bus routes that were on there that would not lend to the actual numbers. I think we had 2,800 people per day were using the thing, and it was actually larger than that because they would not allow the bus traffic commuters to be included into those numbers. And I'm just wondering, is there a station at Foley Boulevard in Phase 1?
Mr. Schreiber?
No, Mr. Chairman, the Foley Boulevard situation was unique. It is the example that Metro Transit has regularly used as to why you ought to take the bus, because they have the Porsche that leaves the Foley Park and Ride at the same time that the loaded bus leaves Foley Park and Ride, and the bus has the advantage of the bus lanes and is able to avoid the congestion. Even though it's only going 40 miles an hour, it's still avoiding the congestion, and the bus gets to downtown Minneapolis constantly quicker than a Porsche can. And that's the issue as it relates to the cost effectiveness index with the feds, because they look at time saved. Quite frankly, there's excellent bus service from the Foley Park and Ride, and that's why it's not being included as a station at this time, because it didn't help our cost effectiveness index.
And I guess to that point is, when we're talking about the current proposal before us here and others that may come forward, is Foley Boulevard a proposal that we're going to see in the future here?
Not as a part of North Star Corridor Development Authority, but it would be, my understanding is, it's the proposed stop when it the North Shore line coming in from Duluth, it would be the first stop in the seven county metro area for that line, which makes a lot of sense because it shouldn't go all the way to downtown before it stops.
And just one follow-up, Mr. Chair. And I guess the efficiencies of a commuter rail go down exponentially as you put stations on a stop, obviously, because it takes longer to get from here to there. So I'm just wondering, if you put Fridley in here, what kind of time extension does that put onto the inner city ride?
Chairman, a very good question. It is very little, and quite frankly, Fridley was built into the cost effectiveness index, and it would fall. For the reason it was brought out is because of the dollar cost. And that particular station that's located in between the tracks, requiring the tunneling and so on, it made it the most expensive station. That's why it was pulled. But in terms of, it is so minimal, and in terms of the train is not going at 70 miles an hour at that location anyway, because you're coming into that large Northtown yard where they have to slow down and going through it anyway. So it's very minimal in terms of extra time involved.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions? Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I've been asked every time I've presented a bonding request is if there's matching funds, and that's the question I would ask the author of the bill. Do you have any matching funds in this proposal?
This was never put forth as matching funds because it's, well, how would you describe that? It's I don't know who would match it.
Mr. Schreiber, did you?
Well, Mr. Chairman, the Anoka County and the City of Fridley have made very strong commitments to this. They are advanced funding portions of this right now, which is a demonstration of their commitment to it. If you end up, and we know it's going to be tight, if you end up with something less than 10.65, I think you can be assured that the City of Fridley and the County of Anoka will make up the difference.
Well, any further questions?
Mr. Chairman, I would ask Representative Hausman if she would yield to a question. Thank you, Representative. You know, we've been asked this when we testify on requests of, in fact, we've had some turned down because the matching funds have not been what the committee at that time I thought was necessary or whatever. Could you tell me what your thoughts are in these requests and what your thoughts on the leveraging and additional funds to leverage projects would be?
Representative Hausman?
What I heard Mr. Schreiber saying, though often we talk about federal matching funds,
yeah.
In this case what they're suggesting is there are local matching funds, so it's kind of a different direction. I even heard a lot of flexibility. I suspect Mr. Schreiber and Representative Lane know enough about the pressures on the bonding bill to know that we are always asked them for phasing and, you know, what's the bottom line and that you can accept. And I heard already directions from the testifier about flexibility there.
Representative Magnus?
Well, my question... to the Chair Hausman is, what's your thoughts about leveraging? I mean, do we, not this specific project, and Representative, I'm not critical of your project. I'm not saying that at all, because I do think your project is fine. I just want to know what your thoughts are as we move forward. So I have answers when I get, you know, projects that are in front of us as a committee member, or when I bring up projects, and I'll get somebody hold me in the corner and said, where's your leveraging funds, and then are you going to vote for the bill? If we put this in there. So I'm not asking how we're voting on the bill yet. I just want to know what your thoughts are as the chairman of the committee on the leveraging situations of the
Chair, some of you may remember my speeches on the floor last year. In last year's bill, when there are federal dollars particularly, we're very clear, and we included some things in last year's bill which leveraged really quite significant federal dollars. I just remember the Cuyuna project and the, where $125,000 leveraged really a fairly significant amount of federal money. There was a Mississippi River, a Great River Park project where $3.8 million leveraged twice that in federal money. In RIM, if we were able to pass our bonding bill and get paperwork to Washington before March 15th, there is something like three times the amount we might put in the bonding bill. So leveraging federal money particularly is always of great interest to us. In this case, what I heard was a slightly different partnership where the matches were from local government.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chair, this is the mayor of Fridley, Scott Lund, and he'd just like to make some comments about Fridley's part in this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Scott Lund, Mayor Fridley. And I want to speak to you briefly about the support from the city of Fridley. And when I talk about the city of Fridley, I'm not talking about our local HRA, I as the mayor, the council, or the city staff. I'm talking about the taxpayers and the voters of the city of Fridley, who fully expect, by and large, that the Fridley Station is a part of the North Star Project. Many of them have not been that close to the situation and are quite dumbfounded that it's been taken out of the mix because of lack of funding. So we have progressed along with the county and the support of the county and our full support and backing of our local constituents to try to move this thing forward. Of course, the brakes will stop on that track if we do not get the funding from the state here. The time is right. I can't tell you of any other project that has the potential for economic benefit, not only to our community, but as to the state, too. You know, we hear quite frequently now about recession and moving things along to try to get the economy up and going, and I think this would be one heck of a shot in the arm, quite frankly, because with the state's help, with this additional funding, we can be ready to move as early as May of this year to start the construction with the tunnel. I don't know if it's perfectly situated. Our station is so perfectly situated for its intended use, and that is for traffic congestion and the relieving of it. We have three major corridors that traverse through Fridley, and that's University Avenue, State Highway, Highway 65, State Highway, and East River Road. This, how convenient is it, or is it just dumb luck, I guess, that there are two empty parcels, properties, one on either side of the track, in a fully developed first-ring suburb, that we have that availability right at our hands to have the station site, which will gather traffic on those two major corridors in Fridley, and that's East River Road and University Avenue. In addition to that, as a cross-corridor heavy traffic is Interstate 694, just a couple of blocks south of the proposed station site. And only through the lack of funding, and isn't that always great, we all can have lots of vision, but it all comes down to vision equates to money, and of course, we need that funding to make this reality. I think it would be an economic shot in the arm for not only Fridley. Again, we have had many developers come to us, and they're waiting for the okay, the move ahead from this state, saying that, yes, that station will be a reality, and there is a number of economic developments that are waiting in the wings. We have a developer that is waiting with 25 acres to redevelop in Fridley, but he has laid off his plans until they see the outcome of the North Star Rail in Fridley. BAE Systems was talked about here by Mr. Schreiber, the old United Defense. Most people recognize the United Defense. They are also redeveloping that huge area just south of 694. And they, again, are waiting to see the outcomes of North Star. It's a situation of it being, we're about nine, that station would be about 9.5 miles from downtown. The first station right now is way up in the second site in Coon Rapids, the first one you talked about at Foley. That's got to be in excess of 15 miles. What good does the North Star Rail do if it doesn't have stopping points, especially where we're trying to relieve a lot of congestion, and that's on these major corridors that I spoke about earlier. So we're very supportive. We have the support of our community, the voters, the taxpayers. We'd certainly like your support. Again, the brakes stop with all the movements forward that we're doing everything that we can to aid the state in trying to come to the conclusion that we hope that you will.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Mayor, you have a very compelling argument I'll add, though, that most of the packages that come to the table here, when you say that you have the support of the taxpayers and the constituents in the area, have a dollar figure that goes along with that, typically about half the cost of the project. And so I'm just wondering, what is the, from what I'm hearing in this particular project, this is the total cost of the project without any local match. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just encourage, you know, if there is that kind of buy-in support in any project on a local basis, if the people are that energetic and enthusiastic about a particular project, they're willing to say it's not just up to the people of Minnesota to make this project come forward, but because there's economic development in the particular area that it's being focused on, their willingness to step up to the plate and match the state dollars that come into the project.
And, Mr. Chair, I would just like to make a comment that Fridley did take initiative to find money to purchase some of the parcels of land around it, which stretched Fridley, but they have that sort of commitment there.
And Mr. Chair?
Representing
so how much did that come to?
I think that I'd like to defer to our assistant director, Paul Boland from the HRA is here, but if we need some of that, those dollar amounts. I recall, Mr. Chairman,
Severson, sorry.
There you go, Representative Severson. We've actually got some discussion legislation here also, some companion legislation regarding a TIF district creation for that station site, and utilizing some existing TIF that is unused in other expiring districts that would amount to about $2.4 million over time. And we were willing to incorporate that into this project, either for redevelopment in a TIF or in conjunction with this rail station. That legislation didn't come to fruition last year, and you're actually working on that in another committee right now.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul, am I stating that quite right?
I would just...
It is 3.1.
Okay.
3.1 million. Representative Lane, you were correct. So.
We should get moving unless there's further questions. Is there further testimony?
Just a comment that Anoka County has committed $40 million, which has matches at the local level for that amount of money. So there's been a lot of work up to this point already.
Okay. Thank you very much for the testimony. No further questions. We do have the change, Representative Hausman, in the lead-all amendment. We have to substitute a new amendment. And would you move then? Substitution, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair, whatever that number is, I would move
E3.
G3?
Mm-hmm.
E3. I'll move that amendment.
Thank you. Mr. Bruce, would you explain the technical change?
Mr. Chair, members, the DE3 amendment contains mostly the same language. The amounts are unchanged. This fixes an issue with the drafting of the previous amendment where some language on the I-94 corridor transitway was inserted into the Rush Line subdivision. This reinstates the Rush Line related language. That's in subdivision 9 on page 5 of the DE3 amendment.
Any questions? If not, we'll delete amendment E2 and substitute E3. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The new amendment is adopted or approved, please. Who does? It's Hausman's amendment. What's he going to do here, Representative Hausman? Representative Hausman, apparently Representative Bingham has some explanation of that amendment. Okay, we'll call her to the...
If you're willing, I would just on page 5, line 16, they have asked me to amend that to 1.5 million first.
It's in there. Do you want to explain it to our representative? explain this change. Okay. Would you kind of make a brief too?
Yes, absolutely. Mr. Chair, I represent the district where the Red Rock Corridor, with this commuter rail, would go from Hastings to St. Paul. And what House File 418 does, it would provide for design construction of Ferguson to Park and Ride to build more that ridership for the corridor. So I don't know if research has the oral amendment to the delete all.
But then how do you want to handle that? To move that oral amendment to you. You've heard the amendment. Any questions? Is it okay? Or Mr. Burr?
Mr. Chairman, members, there's a piece of paper being passed around that contains what the oral amendment would be. This would be an amendment to the DE3 amendment. It would change the language on Subdivision 8, replacing the Red Rock Corridor Transitway language with the language that you see on the piece of paper.
Mr. Burris, I think there's probably a technical one there. It refers to House File 28. Should be, you want that?
That shouldn't be House File 2800. I've been in that bill for quite a bit recently. That should be House File 380.
Okay. Any questions regarding the oral amendment?
Mr. Chairman, does that also affect the total appropriations number on page 3 of the $218 million?
Mr.
Chair, Representative Deere, there are actually two amendments that we're working on. The first one that we're taking up, I believe, is just this piece of paper that's handed out, and this is just the language change to describe the project. I believe Representative Powelson is also going to be offering an oral amendment that would change the amount as a second amendment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, did you just move to give Red Rock Corridor $214
million? No, $218.3
million. Oh, okay.
Representative Magnus, you got that totally?
Yeah, I think so.
All in favor of the oral amendment? We don't need any more testimony.
Okay.
Sorry. I mean, it's just an oral amendment, right?
Yeah.
All in favor of the oral amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary. The oral amendment is attached to E3.
Representative Hausman, you have an oral amendment too?
Here, I move, I think they prefer that we change that amount from $500,000 to $1.5 million.
Would you identify where it is, Representative Hausman?
5, line 16 of the DE3 amendment.
What was the change again, Representative Hausman?
1.5.
Do you have that, Representative Hausman?
5 million.
Mr. Burris? Everyone understand the change? Not all in favor of the oral amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Amendment, the oral amendment is passed. Representative Hausman, can we call Representative Carlson depending on the vote between the two? It's not part of that's the subcommittee report, I believe, that he has. If we could temporarily place it aside. Oh, no, he's part of the bill. I was looking.
It is part of the
bill. He's also part of House File 2408. That's the same Carlson, isn't it?
I think there's only one of us these days.
Yeah, okay. Well, Representative Carlson. Yeah, you're in House File 3274.
That's right. Mr. Chairman and the witness from Hennepin County are here now. This would do is provide Kevin...
Representative Carlson, do you want to move? We don't need to move it, though. Excuse me. Okay, go ahead.
As I understand, Mr. Chairman, we'll just have a presentation on it at this point. So, what this does is, Mr. Chairman, in House File 3274, which would ultimately be moved into the other bill, provides $17.5 million from the bond proceeds account to the Metropolitan Council for a grant to the Hennepin County Rail Authority for the alternative analysis and environmental impact study and property acquisition for the Boutonnau I still have trouble with that. It's real bad. Highway 81 corridor. for the Highway 81 corridor, and I would like to introduce then Mike Hopat, the Hennepin County Commissioner, and then Katie Walker is here as well, and if you want to come forward to answer any questions or to give you further information on the project.
Welcome to the committee. Do you have any testimony?
Just briefly, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Thank you, Representative Carlson. My name is Mike Opat. I am a Hennepin County Commissioner, and I'm here wearing two hats. So I'm a County Commissioner, and also I'm the chair of the Botno Boulevard Partnership, which dates back to the year 2000. So Botno Boulevard is County Road 81, which was a state turnback highway back, and I forget if it was 169 or 152, but that periodically when the county swaps roads with MnDOT, the county inherited County Road 81, and we came together some 8 years ago to explore options for a better road, much better transit and redevelopment opportunities, and we've been active ever since in trying to pursue all of those goals. What we're here and what Representative Carlson's been so good to do for us is just try to keep our place in the orders of priority. The governor has zeroed out the what's left of the $20 million appropriation that dates back to when Chairman Mondale was at the Met Council, and I'm not exactly sure why, because we've been active in planning this corridor ever since. The members of the corridor, I should say, are the City of Minneapolis, and their representative is Council President Barb Johnson, the mayors of Mike Holtz of Robbinsdale and Renee Bowman of Crystal, Steve Lampy of Brooklyn Park, Mark Stephenson of Maple Grove. Target Corporation is a member, Wells Fargo is a member, North Memorial Medical Center is a member, and North Hennepin Community College is a member. We've been working with the MAC, as the County Road 81 runs right by the Crystal Airport, and also the Met Council throughout this effort. In fact, Chairman Mondale was a member and sat with us for years, and Chairman Bellart did for a while as well. We believe that this corridor is, and on all studies that I've seen, the ridership numbers show this to be there to be great demand here for transit. We originally started out planning for a busway, and as time evolved and things changed, such as the Target investment in Brooklyn Park, as well as the success of Hiawatha, as well as the increased traffic demand along the corridor, it became clear that we should not only consider a busway. So in fact, last year we began a scoping study with all the cities, with all the partners, and looked at a number of different routes, and then began a discussion about did we have the right mode here. And I think it was pretty much unanimous among all the parties and the citizenry who have been on our Citizens Advisory Council for the partnership that we should push the pause button here and begin an alternatives analysis and try to decide if we try to get this right. We only get one chance at these things, and we want to make sure we got it right. As of now, the county is engaging, in fact, I believe we have a firm engaged to conduct the alternatives analysis. The county is committed, as we did with the Southwest Corridor, about $1 million to conduct the alternatives analysis and make sure we gather all the data to make this corridor keep pace with all the other studies that have gone on. So to have the state back away from a commitment to help us with transit this quarter would really be a step backward for transportation in this area. The Devil's Triangle has been on hold now and backed up several years. Highway 100 did for years in days gone by. And our message is that we're ready. We haven't been as vocal, mostly owing to the fact that North Star wasn't done yet, and we had been asked to be patient while North Star got approved, and because if you one zooms out from a map, it looks like it might serve the same travel shed as but then that's only if you deny the existence of the Mississippi River, which makes people come in a vastly different route. So our message today is that we have great demand up here. We have the target Northern Campus is on building number 5, I think, with plans to build out those dozens of acres. I always get the number wrong, so I don't want to commit to a number. The Hiawatha success has gotten people excited. The incredible boom in Maple Grove has increased demand in that area, which is the same travel shed. And then, of course, all the activity happening in and around the ballpark, which is where the this line would likely land downtown. So we think it's a great synergy. We want to keep planning. We want your partnership. And I hope you can see through to include us in the building here.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Bruce?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Opat, the $20 million appropriation that was zeroed out, can you give me a brief history on that, when it was granted and how it was being spent, and when that zeroing out happened?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, originally I believe it was in the, what would the bonding bill have been? It might have been the 2000 bonding bill.
Okay.
We had, how some of it was spent was really by the Met Council. I think they did some studies along the way. Possibly some of it, there is a new park and ride that was built in the corridor on land the county gave to the Met Council. It's up. There's almost no service to it. It's a little bit ticklish as I try to answer the questions to people who call. You got a brand new park and ride here and only three buses coming in the morning and the afternoon. I think that will resolve itself at some point. But otherwise, we've been trying to figure out, quite frankly, what is a busway at this latitude on this planet? There, we don't have any operating now, and if one, I've not done a lot of traveling. I did go out to Los Angeles, and they call very different things, both rapid transit. They'll have they call it the rapid red that runs in traffic. It took an hour to go from L.A. to Santa Monica on a busy street, and that was rapid. And then they have an orange line that goes on its own right-of-way that is a little bit faster but doesn't have nearly the ridership. So a lot of it is we've been trying to figure out, well, what does this really mean? And to be honest, I don't, Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, I don't know that there's a conclusion with that.
Representative Beard,
well,
yes,
what I was going with that, yeah, was the balance of the $20 million, was that zeroed out in the initial budget crisis in 2003? Is that when that was taken back, or when was that
zeroed out? No, Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, that's just this year in the governor's request. Zeroed it out.
Okay, that helped me understand. And I got one more follow-up, if I may. The $17.5 million seems like a whole pile of money for studying alternatives and so on, but I see there's a little piece in here about acquiring property acquisition. Can you talk briefly about how the $17.5 breaks down and what property you're planning on acquiring? And if you do, does that property lend itself to busway as well as rail?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, as I mentioned, we haven't been sitting around all this time. I think we have identified sites that would be excellent transit sites, like the park and ride, quite frankly, mm-hmm. for whatever mode is ultimately chosen. So there are some sites along the way. There's also a rail corridor that has the Monticello spur of the BN line, which its last customers are really in St. Michael, although it continues to and ends at the Monticello power plant.
Right.
So we've had some discussions on and off with Burlington Northern, but as I think members will know and have heard in this committee many times, those are always a little ticklish, so we want to make sure we have a commitment to finish a line before we start to really engage them. But also, they don't really like to engage unless they know you're going to arrive with your checkbook. So I think we do have some sites that we could acquire. We do have some sites that will need some remediation. And also we have some potential rights of way that we could purchase in the coming years. And I think on a reasonably rapid turnaround.
Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, to that point, I have seen Met Council in just about a minute ago, and so I'm going to speak for them. I don't believe this is perceived as a backing away from Botineau Boulevard on the part of Met Council. I am almost positive that Botineau is still indicated as a Tier 1 project. And their belief, though, was that though this was initially designated as bus rapid transit, that your thinking now is more in the LRT direction, and that as you had been written into federal law, it was always BRT, and the belief was that you really kind of, the way this process works, you sort of have to start over again with language in the federal bills. And so I think the cancellation of the bond this year was not a backing away from the project, but an acknowledgement it was redirecting. And I think the strong commitment is still there to the Botineau Boulevard. I'm speaking for the Met Council, but that is what I believe they would say.
Any further questions or not? If not, another a testifier.
The idea of looking at an alternative analysis, if you look at this historically, there actually was an interest before the busway in rail. And in fact, I participated along with a lot of other folks from the northwest suburbs in a demonstration ride that was commuter rail. And Amtrak brought in several cars, and I happened to board in Robbinsdale, which I know Representative Leader's very familiar with, having lived in the community at one time many years ago. But I boarded in Robbinsdale and went downtown, but it actually started in Monticello for that demonstration ride. So it's not putting something totally new on the table when we look at an alternative analysis. There has been interest and discussion historically, is what I'm saying. And I did get a little bit of information. It was 2002 from county staff that it was originally and then authorized and then reauthorized in 2004 and would have run until 2010 had it not been canceled. It was the way the legislation did read at one point. But with that, I think we're done.
Do you have further testimony or testify on the lady or not? Yeah.
Excuse me, it was both things. It was reauthorized. Yeah.
Yeah. Any further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We have another amendment, Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, before we do that, there are two other, I think we've mentioned all the transit projects and corridors. There is one other part of this bill which we don't want to overlook, and that is the port development assistance. We have House File 2478 authored by Representative Pawlowski in your packet, and it is also indicated as being part of the delete all, and we have somebody here. I think the committee knows the Port Development Assistance Project in the past, but certainly if there's someone here who can speak to it if there are questions about that part of the bill.
Representative Hosman, I assume there were others too. That's why we didn't draw them up.
Uh-huh.
I thought you would be going through those. You going to comment on those or not?
I think the rest of them, I mentioned every one of them in my overall system.
That's what I wanted to confirm.
Yeah.
But you do have an amendment also.
Yes.
So this gentleman. Oh,
this is the port. Questions about the port.
On the port authority? Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Kevin Wally. I'm speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Ports Association. This is a request that has come to the committee at least every other year for the past decade or so, and the committee's been kind enough to recommend to the Capital Investment Committee the allocation of bond proceeds to improve port infrastructure. I'm here to respond to any questions you have. The ports that would be impacted by this are Red Wing and Winona and St. Paul and Duluth. Those are the public port facilities through which we transport Minnesota commodities to the national and world markets and from which we receive inbound commodities as well.
Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Wally, thanks for bringing something forward that doesn't have nearly the sex appeal that light rail does, but it has probably more impact on our state economy than all this other stuff put together. The port, first of all, Port of Savage was conspicuous by its absence in your comments. Are they available for this also?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, the Port of Savage is not a public port,
okay.
And so the use of bond proceeds is restricted to public facilities, and Savage docks for the transshipment of grain primarily are privately owned and operated.
Thank you. That was an important question for him to answer, because you're going to hear at some point the Lower Minnesota River Watershed District is asking for, I think, $150,000 to help the Corps dredge the waterway, which is the public infrastructure. But all the facilities built in the Port of Savage are indeed private adventures that then operate off of the river. Still, the public facilities at Red Wing, Winona, and Minneapolis, is it?
St. Paul.
St. Paul. Are open to all common carriers, though, if I'm not mistaken. And once again, this is a personal political philosophy I'm very fond of. The government builds the infrastructure and then lets private companies prosper by using it and moving the goods and services. That's my statement. Now the question is, are these funds administered through a department at MnDOT? Is that what I understand?
Yes, there's a ports and waterways section at the Minnesota Department of Transportation with which the various ports work on a routine basis.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Rifkin, good. I think, have you been on the finance before or not?
Mm-hmm.
But normally, it's been every year something coming in.
Right.
Never enough. I know that. But
no.
Any further questions? If not, thank you, Mr. Wally.
Thank you.
And then, Mr. Chair, there's one final issue, and I would move the... Do we have a number on this? It's the one that's just been handed out to you to add... Mm-hmm. An amount to the rail service improvement. Remember the other day when we had the rail issue before us, the one where they now go 7 miles an hour and they'd like to go faster? At the time of that discussion, you raised the issue, Mr. Chair, I think, about the fund that the revolving fund, and a gentleman came forward and indicated not much money in that. And Mr. Affitz is here. If you want just a little bit of information about the Rail Service Improvement Fund and its lack of funding, and we just wanted to bring this forward as part of this bill as well.
Unless there are questions from the committee? Let's endure.
I have just an observation on it, if I may, for the committee, and maybe Mr. Affitz could keep me out of the deep weeds. But this was a program where actually money would be lent to the shippers and the railroads who would use it and then pay it back. So it was sort of like a revolving fund. And we kept the balance in there for so many years. And it's sort of, what happened to it is sort of where I was trying to ferret out with my question about how Commissioner Opat lost his $20 million, because during the big budget crisis of 2003, there was surplus money that, as we were trying to balance a checkbook that was in red ink, we swept some money out, much like we did, Mr. Chairman, to the airport fund. Remember that? But the thing is, we put the airport money back. We never put this money back, if I'm not mistaken. And so I would speak wholeheartedly in favor of resupplying that fund so that they can get on with helping save some of these short line railroads and rebuild their infrastructure.
Thank you, Representative Beard. That's correct. Mr. Affitz.
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Affitz. I'm with the law firm of Messerly and Kramer, and I represent the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association, which are a group of the short line and regionals that are the smaller railroads that serve Minnesota's basically rural areas, essentially. If I might, to Representative Beard's comment, that is exactly correct. In the budget deficit period, we had an unallotment of about $6.4 million. However, I do need to correct Mr. Beard a little bit. Some of that money has come back. We've had about $3.4 million that has been put back thanks to your generosity and that of Chairman Houseman over the last couple of years since that time. The dilemma here, however, is that when the money is loaned out, it's loaned out on a long-term basis. And so you pay that back over 20 years or so. Quickly, the program itself was created in 1976. It was funded in 1978 and in subsequent years. That money was loaned out, 20-year terms. You can see that some of it's come back around and then loaned out again. I believe, and Mr. Gardner is here from the Department of Transportation, if you wish to hear from him. It is his program, and he's a good friend of the railroads, I must say. I think he has a balance of $2 to $3 million available for in that revolving fund for re-lending to others. Mr. Chairman, I see a puzzled look. Like I could respond to another question.
You have a question? No, I'm trying to figure out if we have a few other things here. I'm trying to figure them out.
Yes,
not figure out.
Could I just clarify one thing? Indeed, you heard from Mr. Short and others who are working on the project down in Winthrop on the Minnesota Prairie Line. That is an important project. They're going to move a lot of ethanol out of a plant in Winthrop, and if they get that line fixed up, they have the opportunity to go east, which is their current path, and west. If they get more of it fixed up, depending on ULRJ, which is great because then they can hook in with a Class 1, a large national railroad on each end and benefit their customers through, if you will, competitive pricing. I don't mean for this to supersede that. I do mean for this to add to that. And I know your dilemma, Madam Chair, in terms of the resources available, so you are very kind to give us the opportunity to be considered. And this is one of MnDOT's priorities, but they got a lot of stuff on their plate, as was made apparent last night.
They're unable to bring this forward. This is about 7 out of 8 or 9 out of 10, something like that. But you've always given this consideration as we've come forward year after year, and we certainly appreciate the help.
Mr. Apex, if this money comes, this is additional money which we didn't have before. Now, that would take a good part, help that short line?
Yes, sir.
It wouldn't take it all to Hamley Falls or anything.
No, you've got 10 in there. Mr. Short indicated he needed about 30 to upgrade the entirety of that rail line all the way out to Hanley Falls, but I think what he said to you was that over the period, the 4 to 6 years that would be necessary, he could get the thing built in 4 to 6 years, and if you were able to stage your allocation to him, or your appropriation, that would work for him. I recall him saying
that. Just to clarify, to a refugee housing, the reason this is coming could be, you can get some match money basically, or to affect your bonding bill, really, right?
That is a very good project. If I could just mention one last thing, we did a little survey of the needs of short line and regional railroads in Minnesota, my clients, and we asked them, over the next 5 years, what do you think you're going to do in terms of infrastructure improvements? And they anticipated as much as $25 to $30 million worth of need in terms of laying down new tracks. You saw the track on the MPL, but it's along the 1,400 miles of other short lines and regionals in the state of Minnesota. We got to replace bridges. You guys know a lot about bridges. Now you're going to hear some more about bridges in just a little while. A bridge for a short line railroad can cost as much as $1 million. That's a lot of money for a little railroad that doesn't have that sort of resource. And there are a lot of railroad bridges out there that need attention, just like our highway bridges do. They're built to a heavier standard, obviously, because you're moving heavier stuff across them. But we figure $25-30 million over the next 5 years needs to be invested by short lines, as well as the money that's going to be invested by Class 1s in their infrastructure as well. Try to keep that stuff up to grade and moving quickly, because the better the track, the faster you can turn the cars. The faster you can turn the cars, the more efficient the freight, the more money that is made, and the more savings that are passed along to customers to our rail shippers. I could go on for a long time, but I think you've got a lot of work to do. I appreciate
any questions, Mr. Affleck? What's in Houston? Okay.
Not to this, but I have one more thing. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Affleck. We need to move the amendment.
Mm-hmm.
We need to vote on it. Mm-hmm. This basically adjusts the totals in the title, wasn't it? You have the amendment before you. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Amendment passes. Representative Howard.
And then, Mr. Chair, I have one more, and I don't know if it requires an amendment or House File 2956. I referenced this earlier, the North Shore Express. I don't think they call it that anymore, but that's still what the bill says. And the amount in the Dutton Tree still throws $500,000, but their bill this year is for $1,950,000. And is there an assumption that the House files you have in your packet are going forward, or do I need to amend the amount?
Mr. Burris, I think you should amend the amount, right?
Okay. Then I would move on page 2, line 15, 1,950,000 to delete 500,000. And insert $1,950,000.
Mr. Burris, you have this, I think. Any questions on the oral amendment?
From that project are here if there are questions, but I think they don't need to testify particularly.
If not, all in favor of the oral amendment, say aye.
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 Contrary, no. The amendment passes. Exactly.
Yes, and Mr. Chair, just by way of summary, I couldn't pass up a response. I think Representative Beard suggested that our traditional ports have a huge economic benefit and that perhaps the transit corridors does not. And I have to say, we have really a huge amount to learn about this new way of living and working and moving. And I will simply quote you some numbers from the book that the Midwest Regional Rail Initiative provides us, the economic impacts of the Midwest Regional Rail System, and we discussed one of those projects. Representative Slocum is our commissioner to that board right now, and I had just asked her if she could get copies of both this book and presentation that we received, that where they lay out for us the cost from La Crosse to St. Paul, which we have an interest in. But on the cover, the overall economic benefit they estimate for this, $23.1 billion. Permanent new jobs for the Midwest Regional Rail System, over 57,000 jobs, and the average annual jobs during construction, over 15,000 jobs. I mean, it is a, moving in a whole different direction, and we, I think, just need further education about the huge economic benefit as we invest in a variety of transportation choices. But this might be something the committee would appreciate.
Was that on high speed, Representative?
Yes.
I missed your meeting the other day. I didn't get there.
Okay.
Representative Slocum.
Chair Leader. I will be getting information for the committee.
Okay, that'd be fine. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, I had the opportunity to go to a institute this summer. The Heritage Foundation had put on by partisan group, and they had done a study. There was a study not from that group, but from a, I think it was a European. Representative Beard went as well, but they had a report on rail and what the mix is in between freight and passenger rail. And I think it would be very advantageous for this committee to hear, you know, that particular provision, because there was in Europe, where they obviously have a large passenger rail contingent there, there was the study done, and there was some concern that you can't have both. You can't have large freight and you can't have large transit. And so there's a mix, there's a balance that goes off there. And I think as we move into this section of the concept of heavy rail for use, that there's going to be a toll to pay on goods and services in terms of logistics for heavy materials that are traditionally used in transit much cheaper than by truck. So, you know, if we're going to take a look at this whole process, I think we need to go not just from the benefits of passenger rail, but how is that going to tell on our entire system in terms of how much sacrifice is going to be laid at the feet of the consumer because we can't seem to move bulk fast enough. So I think there's a larger discussion that needs to be had in the committee as well.
Thank you, Arthur. One of the things that that we're thinking about after the committee deadline to probably look at some of those things, I think, in the agenda coming up. Representative Housen, do you have any further comment or question?
I think
we have another.
Any member of the audience who feels we forgot something, I think I mentioned all the pieces.
We have also to take care of Representative Yarris. Do you hear anything back from me? And Representative Yarris is not available, so we'll lay that his subcommittee report temporarily.
1822.
House File 1822. We'll just leave that in the committee temporarily. We have another person who wants to testify, Jason Flores from Twin West. Is he in the audience or not? Jason Flores?
He was the speaker. He's not.
Flores? Do you mean are there person who wants to testify in behalf of against the Hausman Amendment? If not, that's the last business I think we have. If there are no further questions on the amendment, Representative Hausman, can you Representative Beard?
Mr. Chairman, I think there's a little bit of discussion. I'd like to have Representative Housen clarify before me now what the number is on the DE3 amendment finally, and are these GO bonds, and how does this fit into the company credit card for the big bonding bill going forward that you're chairing?
I think Ms. Zewers is getting the new total since we've had a few amendments, but and while she's doing that, I'll just speak to the process this year. Now, Representative Leader had
a little other work to do and couldn't focus on his bonding recommendations until today. But all finance divisions have been hearing bonding bills, and then on Monday at 10 o'clock, they all recommend to the Capital Investment Committee what's come through their committee. Each has done that somewhat differently, but those recommendations come on Monday, and then the Capital Investment Committee has the challenge of the question you just asked. How does all of this fit together, higher education, environment, clean water infrastructure, public safety, transportation? That will be the challenge of the next week.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, are you looking for a recommendation or a ranking like some of the committees have done on these projects?
Everyone is choosing to do it differently. I believe in the case of higher education and economic development, they heard all bills and are forwarding all of them. And I think that's what Representative Leader is doing. Every committee has the rules don't specify how they do it. It's up to the chair how they want to forward it. So each chair has made a different decision.
That's what we're doing, Representative Leader.
We are. Yep. Okay, because I've got some.
Because they're basically all in the they're all transportation items, really. So, and we don't have enough money for any of it. All of them.
I was wondering if all of these were going to go in. Well, Mr. Chairman, may I then, as a member of the committee, just offer a few opinions?
Yes. We haven't heard all of the requests either. We're going to fit them in. Representative Beard?
I see them in here. And Mr. Chairman, the number will be somewhat north of $219 million, which is a pretty big number, excuse me. But just thinking in prioritizing from my perspective on what government is best at, I would just encourage you to think in terms of that those projects which preserve right of way, which may be lost, particularly anything that rail banks or preserves assemblages of land that railroads or other companies have done over the years, last 120, 130 years, and putting these together, I think it would be a shame to lose those. I guess what I'm saying is anything that can be that can preserve corridors for future potential use. All of the studies and so on about how we actually turn them back into, I would rank just a little bit lower, although I see them as important. And I'd ask you, I guess, to consider that, particularly the port assistance and the track rehabilitation. Those are actually existing ongoing government infrastructures that allow a huge amount of commerce to take place and keep our competitive foothold such as it is in the international marketplace. I'd ask you to rank those as high as possible. Mr. Chairman and just members, I did sit through, I know Representative Hopkins prefaced her remarks with, talks about climate change, global warming, and peak oil. I'm on that committee. I suffered through hours and hours of testimony that, in my opinion, was very one-sided, very opinionated, and very partisan, and I wish we could have had time to actually have a balanced and open discussion about what this means, what is going on, what has happened in the past, and where could we possibly go. I did notice that most of the presenters had an incredible bias against marketplace solutions and for massive government intervention. Part of what I'm seeing here is there is some propensity towards massive government intervention and moving ourselves around. We're relying not on buses, not on private carriage, but so much I see a propensity for creating a new government transit system or bigger and more that makes us dependent on that. I fear that someday that will be more expensive than we can bear and would never be as efficient or as effective as ports, railroads, transit stations that allow buses, private companies to compete for the will, the business of consumers, travelers. One thing I would encourage us, our transit friends, to think in terms of as we think about transit development, though, is to, there is some component where congestion relief does advantage transit. But as energy gets more expensive for a variety of reasons, I'm finding more and more of my people are finding the park and ride in Shakopee, for instance, to be more valuable, not because it gets you there any faster, but it gets you there a lot cheaper. And I think price will become a transit advantage that I don't think this committee should overlook. Don't always think in terms of speed, think in terms of what does it mean to people who don't have to pay to drive their vehicle wherever they're going, because there are a few of us that can live that way. I can't, many can. So anything we can do, again, for those public infrastructures that allow people to aggregate, take advantage of cost savings, take advantage of the marketplace and so on, I would ask you to rank those higher, and particularly when they have to do with companies that are doing commerce to keep our state competitive.
Thank you.
And, Mr. Chair, I would just respond on the, I would absolutely agree about the buses. We always say buses are the workhorse of the system.
Very much so.
That reinvesting, investing in rail, if we did not invest in buses, it would be a failure. San Diego discovered that. That bonding, and I don't see Met Council here, but I think he was actually in Ways and Means. It happens in a different way, so when it's not in here, it doesn't mean we're not doing it. It's just Met Council does the bonding for that in a different form, in a different committee. I would absolutely agree. And you even mentioned you said private carriage. Vancouver discovered that, speaking of governance issues, that until they had a governance structure that kind of got all modes planning together, they were sort of a mess. And they even included the planning for taxis. When they planned public mass transit, including buses, unless you also figure out how you link that with taxis, you miss pieces of it. So it is really the planning and management of that system is so key to making sure that it works. But I thank you very much for your advice. I took notes.
Thank you, Representative Bruce. Also, do you look at Section 2 in the front part of the bill? Mr. Flores here is, I believe, in the audience. Representative Hausman, I did check out Vancouver just 6 weeks ago and wrote them all, too. Welcome to the committee. You have some testimony?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I was waiting till the Southwest bill was specifically brought up, and I could do it at that time. I don't know if that...
We did.
Oh, you did all of it together. Okay, then I will proceed. Again, good morning, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Jason Flores. I'm Director of Government Affairs for the Twin West Chamber of Commerce, and also here this morning representing the Southwest Transitway Alliance, which is a group of chambers of commerce along that route, as well as city officials in the cities impacted in support of light rail development along that corridor. Twin West has long been supportive of investment in multimodal transportation system in the Twin Cities metro area. Our 2008 business agenda identified the need for and a commitment to finding $100 million of funding for these key priority transitways. And our board of directors has also made transportation one of our top two priority issues, along with early childhood education for this session and beyond. In addition specifically to this topic with the Southwest Transitway, our board of directors did adopt a resolution supporting the work done through the alternatives analysis study thus far and committing ourselves to partnership with the Met Council, with Hennepin County, and with MnDOT to find a way to plan and construct in a fiscally responsible way as well as a way that serves major business centers along the route. And I think we've done that. We've had representatives of ours serve on the planning group for that transitway, as well as our activities here at the legislature in finding overall funding for a transit system. Here today specifically to support the bill offered by Representative Simon and Representative Winkler, and I would like to take this chance to thank them for offering this bill and for requesting this bonding authority, really just to move into the next phase of draft environmental impact statement and the preliminary pieces involved in putting this transitway together. While I'm here, I'd also like to take the chance on the Botna Boulevard to say that our members are also concerned with development of a transitway in that area. They were supportive as it was BRT, and now they're re-examining some options and going through the alternatives analysis study. We want to play the same role with that corridor that we did with Southwest. So it's an important piece as well there to our members, and we'll continue to be involved in that and with Southwest as this moves forward. So thank you for the opportunity to testify here today.
Thank you. Any questions? President Howison? No comment?
Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Chair, there is one other member who would like to just speak briefly to her corridor. I mentioned earlier the I-94 corridor to the east, and that was one of those where I referenced our need to work in an interstate way with Wisconsin. That Wisconsin has an interest on the Hudson side of things, and so that is really a new concept and a new direction, so spending a minute or two on that one
would be helpful. Thank
welcome
you much.
To the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to underscore the importance of this project.
Would you identify yourself?
I am Representative Julie Bunn, represents House District 56A in the East Metro. I'm very thrilled that the legislature in general and a coalition of East Metro legislatures has formed the Eastern Transportation Alliance this last year that has a long-term vision for linking together many of these initiatives you're talking about today. First of all, I want to say that this particular project, over this interim, the Met Council did a 100,000 square feet kind of aerial view of the various transit corridors. This I-94 corridor and that analysis came out indicating very significant ridership available for these kinds of projects. We have traffic on this corridor equivalent to many of the other suburban metro corridors, which are getting attention already or already in the planning process. We are not on the books for 2030 under the plans up to now, and this project is putting us on in line to receive this kind of attention. So a couple things. First of all, we very much thank you for support of this project to get this underway. Secondly, we very much support the Union Depot Multimodal Concourse because this is a key component of linking up to that eventually. That one just makes this all work. And we also found out from that study that the 36 corridors we haven't discussed at this time, but also the East Metro, also fared very well in those transit studies over the summer. So we're looking primarily at analysis for a busway and enhancing bus options in the East Metro. So thank you very much for your time and appreciate this vision this committee has for linking these corridors and these transit options for our future. Thank you.
Any questions?
And Mr. Chair, the East Metro Transportation Alliance that she referenced is doing all sorts of kind of marketing around these, and I just looked to see how they named this particular one. They described this as the 94 corridor, St. Paul to the St. Croix.
Mm-hmm.
It makes quite a colorful vision just thinking about that, St. Paul to the St. Croix.
Thank you.
Good.
Now, unless there are other questions or... No other testifiers either. Representative Hausman, you want to...
I renew my motion.
Renew the motion. I'm having a little trouble right now. That House File 380, as amended, be recommended to pass and returned to finance with recommendations or referral to the Capital Investment Committee.
Mr. Chairman, could we get the final numbers from Corinne and... On the totals on this before we send it out.
If there is, do you have that?
Mr. Chair, members, the total for the Department of Transportation is $27,950,000. And the total for the Metropolitan Council is
$219,322,000.
Okay. Thank
you.
We probably
won't have any further questions. If not, all in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The House File 380 as amended will be returned to the Capital, referred to the Capital Investment Committee.
Thank you, Mr.
The next meeting is next Tuesday, February 26th. At 4 p.m. and room 10 here. The meeting's adjourned.